I rise to speak on morning business, and I would like to offer my very sincere and heartfelt congratulations to the Senator Pro Tem of this body, Senator Robert Byrd. He has served in the body for 50 years. I've had the privilege of working on the Appropriations Committee with him. There has been no one that has been more faithful to the Constitution, to the goals of the United States Senate, or has served this Senate more honorably. So I just want to say congratulations, Mr. Chairman. May you have many, many more years. Now, if I may, I would like to speak, and I'm joined on the floor by my co-member of the Intelligence Committee, Senator Ron Wyden, who will also speak on this issue. And I'd like to speak about the bill that Senators Rockefeller, Wyden, and Whitehouse and I introduced yesterday. It's the Lawful Interrogation and Detention Act. I began this effort some time ago because I believe very strongly that it is time to end the failed experiment at Guantanamo. It's time to repudiate torture and secret disappearances. And it's time to end the outsourcing of coercive interrogations to outside contractors. I believe it's time to return to the norms and values that have driven the United States to greatness since the days of George Washington, but have been tarnished in the past 7 years. And that's what both Senator Wyden and I hope this bill will do. First of all, let me say, I've sent a copy of it to President-elect Obama's transition team. I've had occasion to talk with him about it and indicated that we look to work closely with him. Now, what this bill would do is require the president to close the detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay within 12 months. The need to close this facility is clear. Along with the abuses at Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo has been decried throughout the world. It has helped our enemies recruit. It has reduced America's credibility worldwide, strained relationships with our allies, and created a misguided dual legal system. Additionally, the Supreme Court now has ruled 4 times that the procedures put in place at Guantanamo are illegal. First, in Rasul v. Bush, the court ruled that the administration could not hold detainees outside of United States law on Guantanamo soil. Second, Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, in which the court ruled that the government cannot detain a United States citizen without due process and struck down the executive's process of labeling detainees as unlawful enemy combatants. Third, Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, in which the court struck down the administration's process for trying detainees outside of the civilian legal system or the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And most recently, in Boutamien, in which the court ruled that detainees must be afforded habeas corpus. Now, Guantanamo was explicitly created to be a separate and lesser system of justice, to hold people captured on or near the battlefield in Afghanistan indefinitely. In 7 years, it has produced 3 convictions, including Australian David Hicks, who agreed to a plea bargain to get off the island, and Osama bin Laden's driver, Salim Hamdan, whose sentence is almost already up. The hard part about closing Guantanamo is not deciding to do it. It is figuring out what to do with the remaining detainees. Under the Lawful Interrogation and Detention Act, the approximately 250 individuals now being held there would be handled in 1 of 5 ways. 1, they could be charged with a crime and tried in the United States in the federal, civilian, or military justice systems. These systems have handled terrorists and other dangerous individuals before and are capable of dealing with classified evidence and other unusual factors. Secondly, Individuals could be transferred to an international tribunal if such a tribunal exists. Third, detainees could be returned to their native countries, or if that is not possible, they could be transferred to a third country. To date, more than 500 men have been sent from Guantanamo to the custody of other countries. Recently, Portugal and other nations have suggested that they would be open to taking some of the remaining detainees as a way to help close Guantanamo. That's good news. Fourth, if there are detainees that can't be charged with crimes or transferred to the custody of another country, there is a fourth option. If the Secretary of Defense and the Director of National Intelligence agree that an individual poses no security threat to the United States government may release him. This may work, for example, for the Chinese Uyghurs remaining at Guantanamo. I believe 5 or 6 have been released and that there's a court stay on a remaining 17. In fact, the court has already ordered that this group be, well, it's being stayed on appeal. It ordered that the group be released into our country, and that ruling has been stayed upon appeal. And finally, for detainees who cannot be addressed in any one of the other four options, the executive branch could hold them under existing authorities provided by the law of armed conflict. I believe these options provide sufficient flexibility to handle the 250 or so people now being held at Guantanamo. If the incoming Obama administration decides that other alternatives are needed, I hope they will come to the Congress, explain the specifics of the problem, and we will work toward a joint legislative solution. The three other provisions in the legislation end parts of the CIA's secret detention and interrogation program. Some of the details of the program are already publicly known, like the use of waterboarding on 3 individuals some years ago. Other aspects remain secret, such as the other authorized interrogation techniques and how they were used and are used. There have been public allegations of multiple deaths of detainees in CIA custody. There was one conviction of a CIA contractor in the death of a detainee in Afghanistan, but other details remain classified. But it is well known that on August 1, 2002, the Justice Department approved coercive interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, for the CIA's use. This, despite the fact that the Justice Department has prosecuted the use of waterboarding and the State Department has decried it overseas. The administration used what I believe to be faulty logic and faulty reasoning to say the waterboarding technique was not torture. In fact, it is. But we will never turn this sad page in our nation's history until all coercive techniques are banned and are replaced with a single, clear, uniform standard across the United States government. I cannot say that too strongly. That standard, established by this legislation, is the interrogation set of protocols outlined in the Army Field Manual. This is the Field Manual. It's not a casual document. It has been developed and restudied and redeveloped over a period of time. There are 19 specific techniques. They work for the military and operate under the same framework as the time-honored approach of the FBI. If the CIA would abide by its terms, it would work, I believe, and we believe, for the CIA as well. These techniques were at the heart of former FBI Special Agent Jack Clunan's successful interrogation of those responsible for the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. They were also the tools used by Special Agent George Pirro to get Saddam Hussein to provide the evidence that resulted in his death sentence. We have powerful expert testimony that the Army field manual techniques work against terrorist suspects. The manual's use across the government is supported by scores of retired generals and admirals, by General David Petraeus, and by former secretaries of state and national security advisors of both parties. Majorities in both houses of Congress passed this provision last year as part of the fiscal year 2008 Intelligence Authorization Bill. I offered that amendment, as I believe Senator Wyden will remember, in the joint conference between the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, and it was added to the bill. It sends a clear message that we do not support coercive interrogations. But regrettably, the President's veto of the bill stopped it from becoming law. The President-elect agrees that we need to end coercive interrogations and to comply strictly to the terms of the Conventions Against Torture and the Geneva Conventions. And so we look forward to working with him to end this very sad story in our nation's history. The third part of this legislation is a ban on contractor interrogators at the CIA. Now, this is interesting. Unlike the FBI, where FBI agents do their own interrogation, CIA agents do not carry out the interrogation. Rather, they hire contractors to do so. And as General Hayden has testified, the CIA hires concentrate on contract people who are not intelligence professionals and whose sole job is to break detainees and get them to talk. Now, I firmly and staunchly believe that outsourcing interrogations, whether coercive or more appropriate ones, to private companies is a way to diminish accountability. I also believe that the use of contractors leads to more brutal interrogations than if they were done by government employees. Think about it. You can have a set of interrogation practices, and dependent upon who administers them and the length of time that they are administered and the combination in which they are administered, they can have very different effects on an individual. There are surely areas where paying contractors makes practical and financial sense. Interrogation, a form of collecting intelligence, is just not one of them. And the fourth and final provision in this legislation requires that the CIA and other intelligence agencies provide notification to the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, of their detainees. Following notification, the CIA will be required to provide International Red Cross officials with access to access detainees in the same way the military does. Access by the ICRC is a hallmark of international law and is required by the Geneva Conventions. Access to a third party, and the ICRC in particular, was seen by the United States in 1947 as a guarantee that American men and women would be protected if they were ever captured overseas. And I believe it still remains that guarantee. So we may remain a nation at war, and credible, actionable intelligence remains a cornerstone of our war effort. But this is a war that will be won by fighting smarter, not sinking to the depths of our enemies. Our nation has paid an enormous price because of these interrogations. They cast shadow and doubt over our ideals and our system of justice. Our enemies have used our practices to recruit more extremists, and our key global partnerships crucial to winning the war on terror have been strained. It will take time to resume our place as the world's beacon of liberty and justice. But I deeply believe, and the co-sponsors believe, that this bill will put us on that path and start the process. So I urge its passage, and I would like, Madam Chairman, if I might, to enter into the record following the history of this legislation and matters it contains.
Without objection, so
thank
ordered.
You.